you're listening to the Swiss Info programme for Saturday, the 10th of January. I'm Jo Fay. Bahnhofstrasse in Switzerland is one of the world's most famous and most expensive shopping streets. It'll mark its 150th anniversary in 2015, but critics say it's losing its character as big-name brands push out independent, family-run businesses.
Zurich used to be very nice for shopping, but during the last years, due to the big brands coming to Zurich, it's getting more and more a standard city where goods can be bought everywhere.
We'll find out from one of the street's longest-standing shops what it takes to survive among retail giants. Plus, in a time before you could walk into a high street shop and buy a smartphone or a camera, how did we document daily life? A new exhibition in the US is showing off the work of a 19th century Swiss artist. He immigrated to the States and drew everything from farms to fences, crops and animals.
And he must have felt really welcomed in that Pennsylvania, German part of the world with all these beautiful, beautiful farms, lots of German-speaking people.
Tie clips, tie pins, cufflinks, or...
Adriano Mastrini is the hands-on deputy manager of Bruno's, one of the last family-run shops on the Bahnhofstrasse shopping street in Zurich. He's reeling off the long list of accessories that today's modern man needs to be outfitted as the perfect gentleman.
Crocodile wallets or umbrellas nowadays, you also don't find them in the top quality. Of course, you find them, but not handmade. It's getting difficult to find such a thing.
Flanked by big-name brands and watch shops, the world inside Bruno's, behind a window display of classic hats and bow ties, has become a rarity. The shop has been standing since 1937.
My grandfather opened the shop, actually before the war. Then my father took over, and now I'm the third generation in the shop.
And has it always been in the same spot?
Yes, always in this house at the Bahnhofstrasse 44.
And what's your sort of main clientele group? Who are you catering for, really?
Our main clientele are foreigners. I would say around 70% are foreigners coming from Germany, Russia, South America, from everywhere, actually.
Do you think that people come specifically here to see this shop, or do they walk past and think, that looks interesting, and come in?
I don't think that the people come especially for us, but they come to Zurich, because Zurich is a nice city. It used to be very nice for shopping, but during the last years, due to the big brands coming to Zurich, it's getting more and more a standard city where goods can be bought everywhere. So there is a tendency that maybe some people will not come to Zurich anymore due to that.
Now a busy street with trams and shoppers, the 1.2-kilometre-long Bahnhofstrasse was laid out in 1865. The street connected Zurich's lakeshore to the main railway station and is now a major draw for Swiss and foreign tourists. The Bahnhofstrasse Association looks out for the interests of 160 businesses on the road. In an office tucked away in Zurich's Old Town, I met Markus Hoenig, a lawyer and mediator by trade. He's also the association's secretary. Does he believe that global brands have taken over the street?
On the one side, it's a result of the popularity of the street. On the other side, it's not a good development if we just have jewels, watches and textile shops here. So the international chains who come to the Bahnhofstrasse should not be too many.
In 2014, Bahnhofstrasse became the ninth most expensive shopping street worldwide in terms of average rental value. Property agents Cushman and Wakefield publish a list of the 10 most expensive shopping streets worldwide every year. The annual price tag per square foot on Bahnhofstrasse is 846 Swiss francs, or $875, an increase of 180 francs per square foot in the last 4 years. Hoenig and the association attempt to negotiate with the street's building owners to try and control the balance of businesses and rent prices.
If the owners are insurances or banks or firms, they have some understanding. Of course, they also have to show a profit. More difficult is with private ownership. The heirs of real estate, sometimes they just want to have more money. So it's not so easy.
Rents on Bahnhofstrasse, however, pale in comparison to New York's Upper Fifth Avenue, coming in at a startling $3,500 per square foot. The famous Zurich Road's most long-standing business, the confectionist and Café Sprüngli, is in the rare position of owning its Bahnhofstrasse property, from which the company's cakes and chocolates are sold. But for most of the street's proprietors, that's not the case. Bruno's is owned by an insurance company.
Nowadays, every owner, they want to get the maximum out of the rent.
Is it a challenge for you at the moment to try and keep up with the rental demands, or are they quite understanding? They want you to stay here. So I imagine with Hugo Boss, for example, they could charge a very high rent.
It's half-half. They are maybe also happy to have us, but on the other hand, it's business as usual. They're just looking for their rent, and if they don't get it or they have somebody else paying more, they will probably go for it.
Is that a problem for you at the moment, that you might have to move out, or is that, you know, you bear it in mind, but it's not a real issue?
Of course it's in our mind, because we don't know what the future brings. It might happen that they raise the rent where you can't pay it anymore. We've seen it with other shops. So we don't know what will happen in the future, but in 2-3 years, who knows what is changing? Maybe it's also going down again. Nobody knows.
One of the shops Maestrini is referring to is the more affordable of the street's department stores, Manor. Located in a large building owned by Swiss Life, the insurance firm wants to raise the rent, renovate, let the ground and first floor to multiple smaller shops, and the upper four floors as offices. At the time of recording, the dispute was ongoing. Set slightly back from the main street, overlooking a small square garden, is the luxury department store Globus. I met the store's manager, Daniel Kunz, and asked if the pressure from global chains and rising rents was also having an impact on them.
Bahnhofstrasse is changing. It's a time of upheaval. We're proud that the property that we're in belongs to our parent company, and as a consequence, we definitely have an advantage. But we have different locations around Switzerland, and that's not the case in all of them.
Their Zurich store is owned by the supermarket group Migros.
A mix of all brands for all price ranges is very important, so it's attractive for all customers to come shopping here. It would be a real shame if it became a street just for luxury or specialist shops.
Domination by expensive brands is either a problem or an opportunity, though, depending on the business owner you speak to. 10 minutes walk away on Josefstrasse, a design-focused shopping street with more independent stores, is the bike shop Urban Rider. Peter Graf, who runs the business with his wife, summed up the Bahnhofstrasse problem in a nutshell when I asked if he'd considered making the move there.
Yeah, of course, you have a lot more traffic there. A lot more people would be aware of your shop, of course, but it's unaffordable.
As Bahnhofstrasse started to grow into the bustling street we see today, across the Atlantic, some Swiss migrants were experiencing quite a different lifestyle. In 19th century America, artists went from village to village, illustrating what they saw. Ferdinand Broder was a Swiss artist who worked in the American states of Pennsylvania and Ohio, hubs for German-speaking immigrant farmers. A collection of his work has been showing in the States. Reporter Tony Ganser went to take a look.
Much research and time have gone into trying to trace Swiss landscape artist Ferdinand Broder's life and work for an exhibit in Canton, Ohio, but the man himself still remains a mystery in some ways. How did he end up in Ohio? Why did he come here?
Good question. And I say good because we don't have the answer.
Kathleen Wishaus-Voss is a fine art appraiser and the curator of the exhibit The Legacy of Ferdinand Broder.
Perhaps he left Kaltbrunn for economic reasons, and perhaps he left for the sense of adventure.
Ferdinand Broder was born in 1833 in Kaltbrunn in the canton of St. Gallen. His father was a tradesman and merchant, but Broder's artistic foundation came from the family's ownership in a bakery. Ferdinand would carve baking molds, listing his profession on a marriage certificate in 1860 as a Modellstecher, or mold carver. His brother migrated to the U.S. and fought in the American Civil War, but Ferdinand came stateside later, in the 1870s.
Yeah, it's likely that he was looking for something more to do. And he must have felt really welcomed in that Pennsylvania German part of the world with all these beautiful, beautiful farms, lots of German-speaking people.
Though Ferdinand had married and had a son, he ended up in Pennsylvania alone and poor. He often stayed in poor houses and at least on one occasion in jail, eventually selling his intricate drawings for room and board and or a few dollars. This was a deal because his drawings were not small, averaging 127 centimeters by 76 centimeters, enough to decorate an empty farmhouse wall. Eventually, as many German-speaking immigrant farmers did, Broder moved nearly 600 kilometers west from Pennsylvania to Ohio, documenting the immigrant experience in his own way.
These Pennsylvania Dutch folks were trying to retain their identity, which is very similar to Broder's own identity.
Daniel Grimminger is a Lutheran pastor and scholar in 19th century culture in Pennsylvania and Ohio.
By the time we get to the 1870s and 80s in Pennsylvania and Ohio, a lot of this identity had been chipped away. In fact, most of the Pennsylvania Dutch, in the largest group, the Lutheran and Reformed people, had already gotten rid of a lot of their language and their folkways. And so here in these drawings, we see the retention of key cultural elements that they refused to get rid of.
Grimminger also has a very personal tie to Ferdinand Broder.
There it is. Abraham
would be 1855.
Grimminger's great-great-grandfather, Josiah Lutz, commissioned a sketch from Broder, which still survives. It is number 700 of the nearly 1,000 Broder sketches thought to exist. Grimminger is looking over a map of Stark County, Ohio, from 1855, containing names of families who Broder might have recognized.
And my grandfather, who died in 1995, he talked about a lot of these families in seeing a lot of these sketches and even in looking at this map. It brings back not only memories of the stories, but also, to me, it connects me to my grandfather.
So Zor is this way in our farm. We see it.
Broder's work has linked generations of families together, but also adopted families, so to say. Exhibit curator Kathleen Wishhouse Voss featured one Broder sketch of a farmhouse called the Bell Tower Farm. The sketch shows a distinct diamond pattern of roof tiles on the house, which still exists today in rural Tuscarawas County, Ohio. That sketch was commissioned by farm owner James Zutavern in 1885, but is now a prized possession of a new family, the Emleys, who live there now. Like most of the sketches, Broder's perspective in the drawing is elevated, giving a bird's-eye view of the farm, even if there wasn't an actual hill or tower for him to see the view in real life. Broder's artistic legacy might live on in his work and in the oral histories of the families for whom he sketched, but Broder himself disappeared at the turn of the century. He returned to Switzerland to collect an inheritance, a sizable one, especially for a poor artist. But the Swiss government records show him verschollen, or missing without a trace, as of 1901. For curator Wishhouse Voss, the legacy of Ferdinand Broder might be in relishing the ways of old.
Find out more about the pictures at www.braderexhibit.com. This has been the Swiss Info Programme, thanks to our technician, Jakob Stoller. And if you want to read more about Zurich's famously expensive shopping street, head over to our website, swissinfo.ch, where you'll also find plenty more news, videos and features on Switzerland. I'm Jo Fay, thanks for listening.